We get the hour started. Our conversation recorded earlier today, Carrie had a chance to catch up with Billy Hanson. Billy, a filmmaker born and raised in Aroostook County, probably best known, as we were saying earlier, for the short film Survivor Type, adapted from the Stephen King short story. It was directed and produced and screened here in Bangor at Penobscot Theater just a few years back. Since then, it's been screened in over 50 festivals around the world and earned more than 15 awards at those various festivals. Also wrote, directed, and produced the Funny or Die series Lightning Dogs, the show No Place to Fall, and his production company, Dirigo Entertainment, released the short film Earworm, which is getting a lot of acclaim out there on the festival circuit. Now, along with all that, he's found the time to add author to the ever-growing resume with an anthology of horror short stories entitled Spider Season that comes out on October 9th. Billy Hanson talked with Carrie earlier today here on Downtown.
So let's jump right into the book. Not only does your title of the book, Spider Season, which is an arachnophobe, gets under my skin right off the bat. The first story, Light Sleeper, starts off with a topic that made me feel like you may have scanned my mind for this, because ever since my daughter was born, I am the light sleeper of the couple, and my daughter, my wife, will sleep right through anything. I was getting the vibe that you might have, like, you know, been scanning my head for some of these stories.
Well, good. That's a good thing, and I worry about you slightly.
Well, yes. Luckily, it's never gone quite as far. I didn't meet someone coming up my stairs, but it didn't go any further than that one night. So.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, Light Sleeper is a story that's probably the closest to anything real that's happened, you know, for in the book. There was a night that I heard a loud bang in my apartment somewhere, and got up to check it out and didn't find anything that fell over. And I just remember standing in the middle of my living room, like, I definitely heard something. What could that have been? And then I was just so wired that I stayed up and just kind of wrote this story. And thankfully the ending in my real life was different than the ending in the story. But yeah, up until the very end, that's a pretty real scenario.
Yeah, and one of the things, and it's not just this story, but some of the other stories in the two, the ending has such a nice upturn to it, in spite of the horribleness of it, that the stories aren't straightforward, and I love that about, as I was reading through this book, there's so many elements in each of these stories.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's one thing that I've sort of learned about myself as a writer. I really want every story I tell, be it, you know, something like a 5-minute short like Earworm, or these short stories that kind of vary in length, I want them to be a full experience for an audience or a reader, you know, so a full, clear, fully crafted story, basically. And I think short stories don't really have to do that. There's a lot of them you can kind of just touch on an idea and leave it open-ended, or, you know, you don't dig too deep into an idea. But, you know, that's why I wanted to put these stories together for Spider Seasons, because they all sort of had this more full storytelling style.
Yeah. And it's hard, because it sounds like I'm being vague, and I am in a way, because I don't want to give away too much of these stories beyond the sort of the initial setup of what it is, because the arc from that setup to where it ends up is so changeable, so covers so many areas that's part of the appeal of the stories in this book.
Oh, thank you.
The stories do run the gamut of horror, from the supernatural, you know, stalking the poor people, to the more mundane types of evil that people do to each other, specifically thinking of The End of Edgar Wren and She Was Perfect, which I found particularly chilling. Is there a type that you find a little bit easier for you to write? Is it the supernatural, or is it the you know, person-to-person horror, or do they both have their appeals for you?
They both definitely have their appeals, but I think in terms of what I find strangely, the simplest to write would be, you know, stuff like The End of Edgar Wren or She Was Perfect. This sort of, if I can find something within myself, some dark part of my mind, like that I can sort of touch on and explore, that then it feels like I'm sort of tapping into a vein and just letting the story flow out, because you can really get into that mindset. And it's, you know, at the end of the story, it's very creepy to have done that, but I think it explores a certain dark area of everybody's minds where, you know, in The End of Edgar Wren, this guy is just sort of obsessed with his own death and how he's going to die. So he goes through his entire day and he sees his own death in everything. And I think that's something that everyone can pretty much relate to. You know, if you see the dangers in the everyday world, and this is just about a person who lets that sort of that tick go to its extremes and, you know, ends up doing horrible things in the guise of protecting himself and remaining safe. And I think, beginning, like, oh yeah, this is, I have this irrational fear of the ever. When I get onto an idea like that, in like a very rooted in very human emotion and human issues, I find that to be a little easier to explore.
Yeah, and that is a case with another story, the one that wraps up the book, Everyone Else is Asleep. It sort of takes those feelings that a lot of people have. In the case of Everyone Else is Asleep, it's, you know, the I'm so sick of this routine life. And it twists it into something dark.
that one's the strangest one in the book. And I remember just having some images in my head of kind of what was happening to this kid. And that one, I really found within the writing of the story what it was about and all that. But yeah, that you're totally right. Actually, that story is kind of a combination of the two. It's sort of building out this supernatural element that also reflects this this thing that we all kind of feel in that routine and how to break that cycle and if we even can. And yeah, so that's why I kind of put that one at the end, because that sort of encompasses all the different types of horror that I've touched on in the other stories.
Yeah, it has the added benefit of ruining some, a little bit of ruination of a great childhood character.
So another sort of personal story about that one is that when I was a kid, one of my earliest memories was that I used to have nightmares about Big Bird. And it was a recurring thing. It was the same thing every time. And I had this sort of big 4-foot Big Bird stuffed animal that used to sleep next to my bed every night. And thinking back, that was probably not the smartest idea.
Now, most of the stories in the book are sort of the traditional, what people think of as a short story. One of the favorite parts for me, though, was you included near the middle of the collection three screenplays that had been part of a writing competition that you took part in back in, what was it, 2016, the New York City Midnight, NYC Midnight. And also included an explanation of how they came about and why you included in the collection. Found those really fascinating reads. In the explanation, you say that under normal circumstances, they wouldn't have seen the light of day, and that was one of the reasons that you included them. You must still, though, labor hope that these get made as a visual medium, too, because or do you?
I do, yeah. The idea to put them in the book was, I was kind of assembling the book, or even just kind of toying with the idea of even doing a book, with what I had, and those stories were sort of still fresh in my mind, and I really liked how they turned out. But with short films, you kind of hit this dead zone, if you will, where if it's too expensive, then no one's really going to put in the money to make it, because short films don't really make money, except for a few rare instances. But you know, they were good, and I wished people would read them, so I realized putting them in the middle of the book might be something special, might make the book a little bit more interesting. And it's a good way to put it in front of people and get them to read it. But in terms of having them produced in the future, I actually just had a meeting last week where I was discussing the book with a production company, and they asked me, like, do you think any of this could be adapted or could be expanded into features or TV? And I said, yeah, I think so. I think, you know, most of these stories could probably be expanded, but they actually latched onto those screenplays and said, I think we can expand these. And so it's definitely sort of a possibility. And I think people are treating them as short stories in the sense that they would be interested in adapting them. So the ideas themselves for those screenplays are still sort of out there.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking, one of them was called Electric Detective, a sort of a post-apocalyptic setting, though that was the setting, not the story. Fantastical Nyla's Magic and the shortest of the three, The Red Helping Hand, they were just captivating stories. I don't know, this may be too old of a reference for you, but there was an old DC comic called The House of Secrets. Back in the 70s,
yeah.
House of Mystery and House of Secrets. They were two different books.
Right.
But those are the type of stories that I grew up reading in those comic books. It's a sanitized version of the old EC comics and stuff.
Yeah.
So they just, you know, the imagery in them was just so captivating.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I find it interesting, you know, exploring the differences between the long form, like the short story writing, and the screenplays, because the word usage is so incredibly different, but they sort of evoke the same kind of thing. So I thought that was an interesting piece to put in the middle of the book, to have this sort of change of pace after, you know, a couple of real dark, heavy stories, to have, you know, a screenplay you can just kind of breeze through, but get the same emotional reaction and see the same imagery and that kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah. So now, do you want to touch on some of the other stuff that you and your company, Dirigo Entertainment, has been doing? Of course, Survivor Type was just me and you talked briefly when you were up here for that screen.
Yeah.
That was a great, great short film.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that Survivor Type short, it's still you know, it's been what year is it? It's been 6 years since I finished that, and still we get asked to screen it everywhere. This weekend is actually screening at the Jacksonville Film Festival in Florida, so it's still making its way around.
And is
to go as part of a Stephen King festival,
right? I was going to ask, is that part of the reason that it has kept the interest, is because of its originations as one of the Dollar Baby adaptations? It's a little limited in the way that people can see it.
Yeah, it's definitely something that people reach out about. They find us on Facebook, and they, you know, I've gotten messages from people all over the world asking where they can see it, and, you know, what the status of it is, if it's going to be a feature. And, you know, it's really cool to see people find it on their own. But in the sort of Dollar Baby community, I think people know it and have heard about it because, you know, there have been a handful of Stephen King Dollar Baby festivals at this point. And also, you know, word of mouth is pretty good for this one, thankfully. So, like, festival directors have seen it, and it's always a crowd pleaser. So the audience will have a reaction one way or the other to it. And I think that's what festival directors love. And that's just sort of given the film a life of its own, which is really fascinating and not something I planned for. But like I said, yeah, it's still getting around after 6 years.
Now, the other one film that Dirigo Entertainment and you produced, but was directed by somebody else that has gotten a lot of attention, is Earworm.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, I worked with a writer-director named Tara Price. And she and I met years ago on a movie that my first job in L.A. She was the lead actress in this movie called Audie and the Wolf. And it was just a little horror movie, but we stayed in touch. And it was after Survivor Type. she reached out to me and said, hey, I want to write this short. Like, would you help me through the production? Because she never directed anything before. And my reaction was, well, I don't really produce anything that I don't myself write and direct. But you know what? Send me the story, like send me the script, and I'll see if I can help. And she sent me the script. It was 5 pages long. There was no dialogue in it, and it was one actor in one location. And to be honest, I was totally blown away. And I think just the fact that it was such a simple story and so efficiently told made me really want to be involved. And so Tara and I put together this tiny little production, and she ended up casting Ernest Thomas, who was in What's Happening back in the day.
Oh, wow.
So he gave this great performance. It's a 5-minute little short, very strange. It's sort of like a mini Twilight Zone episode. And it's been doing really, really well. That's actually screening in Jacksonville this weekend, too.
Yeah, everything I have not seen the entire short, but the entire film, but everything I've seen about it makes me really want to catch that one. It looks intriguing.
Yeah. We're getting toward the end of our festival run now, and now that that's going to be wrapping up, we're looking at online distributors, and we've been approached by a few people who want to put it up on their, you know, a lot of people have independent Roku channels and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They screen a lot of short films. So we're looking at doing stuff like that now. So it should. We're hoping it's going to be available middle of next year, depending on how many festivals we're going to wrap up here.
Well, I will keep my eye out for that. Now, I do have to ask, aside from the obvious example of supplying the name of your company, Dirigo Entertainment, how does has your early life growing up here in Maine in Aroostook County influenced your work?
I think quite a bit. I mean, I think that having grown up in Maine and all over Maine, like I was born in Aroostook County and I was there until I was maybe 12 or so. And then I moved just outside Portland to Old Orchard Beach. And all of that has really stuck with me. You know, I left Maine when I was 18. And I think coming from just that sort of hardworking, get through the winter kind of mentality that everyone in Maine sort of has to have. It has really made a difference in, of all things, my work ethic, I think. Because I do a lot more than a lot of people that I work with and a lot of my colleagues. And that's not to say that, you know, they're not trying hard or anything. But I think when I set my mind to something, I will just see it through and I'll get it done. So I'm able to handle the workload that I think I learned to handle by growing up in Maine. And then in terms of creatively, and this is something I've been thinking about lately, having done the book and looking at my body of work that I've already got behind me, I think that the small town Maine that I grew up in, there's a very strange atmosphere around the people in the town, just in the fact that everyone knows each other, yet there are always things going on that you don't really see. And like, for example, in Old Orchard Beach, I didn't find out until years after I'd moved away that there was a massive drug ring that was sort of running through the carnival downtown. And when I thought back about it, I was like, oh yeah, a lot of my close friends were really tangled up in that whole thing. And so just the idea that there are these, this sort of darkness in a small town with the people you're very close with that you know very well, I think that is something that I touch on in a lot of my stories, whether I mean to or not. I think you can kind of find that in a lot of my work.
Yeah, there's lots of, having grown up in those same small towns myself here in Penobscot County, there's a lot of secrets in small towns around Maine, and I think probably any small town anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my dad, I've had a lot of conversations with him. He still lives up in Old Orchard, and he was always worried about me living out in Los Angeles. You know, he's thinking there's all this crime and all this violence. And, you know, I've been out here for 11 years now. And he called me one day and said, you know, actually, my neighbor just murdered her husband. Like, your next-door neighbor? And he said, yeah, it's crazy. And I said, I've never had a problem out here.
Yeah.
So there's something different about a small town and the darkness that can kind of live there.
Well, the book is Spider Season. It's going to be released on October 9th. Ask for it at your favorite bookstore. Get more information about Billy's work on the company's website, DirigoEntertainment.com. And Billy, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Billy Hansen, talking with Carrie earlier today here on Downtown. And again, look for the book, Spider Season.